The year is 2001. Early in September, the world changed forever.
What happened?
The band Converge released their fourth studio album, Jane Doe, on September 4th, 2001. And nothing else happened that year.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
What a big week.
Yeah, big week. Big week for Rage. the notion of Rage.
And are they a US band?
They're from Boston. Okay. So very close to New York, in fact.
I have to confess, I have no idea where Boston is.
I want to say 3 hours north of New York.
Oh, okay. That explains why it's so cold there in all the movies I see. Okay, great. That's one that I've just like never had to know it. And I was like, this is the time.
I went
to
once. It was
finally
great.
Discover where the fuck Boston is.
Yeah. Guys, I'm here with Beck Child. You're the first repeat guest.
Oh,
congrats.
My God.
Congrats. And and one of the favorites, I think. One of the favorite episodes.
Really?
You were on episode, I want to say 3. We discussed Agnostic Front.
Yes. You're I was trying 4. To remember desperately what the name of the band was.
Yeah.
I just kept thinking, the No Government Boys.
The No Government. Hey, where are the No Government Boys? Thanks for coming out early.
Yeah, politics is stinky poo-poo.
And it's these kind of quips that have got the listeners of Dead Ramones begging for you to come back on.
And they weren't wrong. They're not wrong.
You've got a new podcast.
Yes. We've given birth to our second born.
Screen Queens. So that, did you feel like you hit the ceiling on dude cinema, quote unquote?
Oh my God. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
We did not like movies when we started the podcast. Yeah. And then we were like, let's watch some of the worst movies of all time. And believe it or not, that got exhausting of just being like, and this one sucks, and this one sucks, and this one, the wife is dead again, and oh, guess what? Oh my God, you won't believe
it. Wife's dead.
This guy's the coolest, and he's great at everything.
I love it.
So we were like, well, you know what? We've grown accustomed to watching TV and getting paid for it, so we didn't want to stop that.
Yeah, of course.
So now we just watch whatever we like.
It's more like a cultural, like TV and film sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you're not discussing a specific film each episode.
So what we do is we release 2 episodes a week now.
Oh my God.
Because we never stop.
And how does she do it? Plus Patreon?
And Patreon as well. God fortnightly. Damn. Yeah. We love to chat. We love to chat.
Pod.
Again, getting, I need to stress, I'm like, we work hard. I get to hang out with my best friend and get paid to watch TV. Like it's.
Yeah, nice.
The more the better.
Yeah. So relatable.
But so we have Mondays are like our pop culture app where we talk about like everything on your small screens, aka smartphones. If you've heard of them, they're taking off. They're taking the world by storm.
Man, I wish, I'm sick of these smart, I wish I had a obedient phone.
Obedient?
Yeah. I don't want my phone to be too smart. I just want it to be obedient.
I'm getting
like
sniffed.
This dog. Leave.
Hey, girl. He went straight for the Beck pit, alone. Too. As I shaved and put deodorant on.
As soon as someone is allergic, he's like, all right, let's see how much.
I feel like such a dick
because
I'm allergic to cats and dogs. And every time I see a dog, my brain goes, pat it. And so I go, hi, baby.
Sorry
about the levels just there. And then they all get excited too and then come up and jump on me. And then I just have to put my hands above my head and be like, don't touch.
Don't touch.
It's the and most
then
stressful.
But then they're trying to get to your hands.
Yes, they exactly. Are. Yeah. And they're like, a game. And then it's just so stressful for everyone. So I apologize.
It's okay. Do you want to go on your bed, Gus? It's like, absolutely not. I want attention from you.
He wants to talk about Converge.
Oh, man. The third mic. Gus is the third mic. Come on, buddy. Yeah, cool.
So, yeah, and then Wednesdays we pick 2 things to watch, like a movie and a TV show.
Love
that's
it.
Just come out. We'll talk about it.
And has, because I saw Alex was doing something for the Oscars. Have you guys got an Oscars episode out yet?
We're doing our Oscars recap next week.
Next week will come out. Sick.
Awesome. We had some predictions, but the predictions episode dropped the morning of the Oscars. And we're like, no one has time to listen to this. Weirdly, our least listened to episode.
Yeah.
My God.
I don't want to do any spoilers, but were you correct? Like, were some of your predictions correct?
And most of them were correct.
Yeah, nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was I happy about it?
Yeah.
No.
You weren't happy about it.
Mm-mm.
Who do you think should have won something?
I don't know. Oppenheimer's a great movie.
Oh, yeah, because they swept, didn't they?
They got Best Director and Best Picture, and then
Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor.
Yes, as well. Anyway,
I haven't seen Oppenheimer yet.
Oh,
but I really did think Ryan Gosling was awesome in the Barbie movie. Right. I thought he was like really, really good.
Right, and the whole ceremony was like, they had two songs from the Barbie movie. Yeah, the Barbie cast were front row, and there was so many jokes in the monologue about Barbie, and it was just kind of like, huh, this whole ceremony is like really about Barbie, and it got
that means that they got nothing.
Literally one fucking Oscar, and I was like, oh, okay.
For set design?
I think so.
Yeah.
It was Best Original Song. Anyway,
who cares?
Anyway. You want to hear my full thoughts?
Yeah.
I do actually.
I would definitely engage with that discussion.
Yes, but it's a lot more fun and positive than our last podcast. So
yeah, well, it's not just shitting on stuff.
Yes. But still shitting on things occasionally. Yeah. They're still making bad movies, believe it or not.
You need, for your own mental health, you do need to shit on things sometimes.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Are we ready? Are you ready to shit
Speaking
on this?
Speaking of, no.
Well, okay, so the reason I really wanted you to come on this one is because I said this to you in, I've got a lot to get through, so let's just jump right in, right?
Yes, so this is a very big album for
me personally. You. Absolutely, yeah.
Talk me through where you were in 2001.
In 2001, I was in my year 11 biology class watching the towers fall on live TV.
Oh, shit.
I used to have a joke about it. Like, I was 15 years old, and like no one can really understand the millennial generation if they weren't there, you know, like if you've never had to like hide a no reason boner while also watching 9/11 happen like in real time, it's just totally incongruous, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like I was in the middle of puberty and then watching the single biggest terrorism act to like ever.
That's so many emotions at once.
It's that's exactly what I mean.
I wonder we're all mentally ill.
That's it.
Jesus
yeah.
Christ.
Yeah.
Did you? So you watched the towers go in year 11? They wheeled in the TV.
They wheeled in the TV. Said, yep.
Get a load of this, guys.
yep.
Put the scalpels down. Leave the frogs be. There's been enough today.
It was just bizarre because, like, I think there was no real fucking. Well, because no one knew what was going on. And so I was like, what are we watching? And then it's like, oh, this is the news. What the fuck?
Oh, my God.
So obviously the teacher would have known what it was, but like I imagine they would have been so shocked that they didn't really communicate that to us. Or not that I remember. Yeah.
And
anyway.
You're not concentrating as well. You're trying to sniff the girl's hair in front of you.
Yeah.
Like, and you're like, what's all this smoke? Oh, my God. I guess Bethany can wait.
Yeah. But then, like, I don't know. It was weird because I was in modern history as well, and that was, like, my subject. So, like, our modern history teacher was like, you're watching modern history. I'm like, this is not the... People died.
There was a little part of the teacher that
people
was
died,
so excited to say that.
Yeah. People died. Marie Rossi Price.
Oh, my God. Oh!
Yeah. Fran's dad.
Oh!
Mum. Fran's mum.
Okay.
Well, she's dad energy, but yeah, Fran's
Yeah. A little connection there with the comedy community.
Yeah, absolutely. It's weird. She keeps asking after me. Yeah. I was a model student. I loved modern history.
I was going to say, you would have been a great student.
Didn't love 9/11.
Well, I mean, so
teach
far,
me about Hitler.
You haven't frowned a lot during this record.
I'm so sorry. Need to be more solemn.
Seems like you have forgotten.
But no, that was like, so 2001, that was like, I was still into pop punk and I was still into Limp Bizkit and all that stuff. But for anyone who's listened to the last couple of episodes, I was getting closer and closer to punk and hardcore. Like there's a band called Refused who released a really big album in 98. And I did hear that when it came out.
Mm.
And that was like my first sort of gateway into more underground stuff eventually.
Oh, right.
But I was watching, I was checking like the timeline. So this came out in 2001.
Mm.
Their fifth album, the album that followed this was 2004. And I was definitely like on board for
Deep
that
in.
Release.
Yeah.
2003 was Blink-182's self-titled.
Oh,
the
shit.
The one with Feeling This. And that, I'm
Feeling
trying to find...
This is such a good song.
I'm trying to find the tent poles and like the time, you know, the time stamps in my life. That was the last Blink-182 album I actually bought. That was like the end of my pop punk phase. Yeah.
Wow, in 2001.
In 2003 when it came out. Yeah, yeah.
Right before it got real big.
So I was like, damn. Yeah, so I was like, it was like this weird sort of like, it was just taste making because like all I was just this suburban kid. Like, yeah, Korn, Limp Bizkit, cool. Oh, Blink 182, that's also cool. Like these two sort of different worlds that are very, just very like MTV, Channel V, you know, like stuff. That was
so
my taste.
So crazy at the peak when... like everyone is going crazy for the groom's bride is a whore. You're like rolling your eyes at that.
Yeah, a little
you're
bit. Like, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You think this
I wasn't
is
into
fucking
it.
Gangster?
I was not all into right. Panic at the Disco. Yeah. Yeah. Or My Chemical Romance didn't make it to me.
Whoa.
I think those first couple of singles off
which
Three
was also
Cheers.
Inspired by 9/11.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I told this story last time I was on the podcast.
I think Dave Woodhead did as well when he was, and Andrew Hastings when he was on, and Drew Bensley when he
okay,
was on.
Okay, sorry. I should have known when it was covered.
Did you actually know?
Every year I become more and more. Yeah. I used to, when I was in my 20s, I was like, how could you become one of those fucking losers every year?
Yeah, yeah.
More and more moments where I'm like, shut up, cunt. You sound awful.
Yeah. Well, I got into a band called Thursday. I got into a band called Poison Well. They toured Australia, I think, in 2003. So that was like, I was getting into the underground. I was like, like I said, it was just like developing my actual taste. And I was like ready to leave the more commercial iterations of underground music behind. So I was like new metal, pop punk. I was like, I want more. I want more realness.
Pain.
Yeah.
Darkness.
So... I'm just trying to, this is very vague in my memory, super, super hazy, but I remember I had a friend, his name was Simon, and he's just another suburban kid like me. I met him through the music scene. I met him when I was about 18, and he was like very online, so he'd get all the album leaks. Mm. And so I know for a fact he had an album leak of Converge's You Fail Me, which was their 2004 album.
Oh.
So I heard a couple of songs off that before it actually came out. So I knew of Converge, but like... I can't remember if I had engaged with Jane Doe before or after that, but they were just kind of a band that existed. And part of that was the album art for this. Right. Actually, I wanted to get something. Can you hold on 1 second?
Yeah.
I'll edit it out if I need to. But.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I wanted to get the record.
Oh, you've got it on vinyl. I'm so glad we're talking about the album art because, yes.
Yeah. So I saw this.
It's... stunning.
Yeah, it's sorry.
Hold on, hold your microphone.
Because like the lyric sheet
is a big part that we'll talk about it.
Oh, good, because I
eventually
didn't cop a single word this time.
That's like part of it.
You could tell me that this album every word is, and I will be like, yep.
It kind of is, yeah, yeah.
Truly.
So I don't think this, because this is a reissue. Like I tried for years and years. I just really wanted this album on vinyl. I couldn't get it. So this is actually a reissue. This isn't an original pressing.
Oh my God,
they
so
reissued it on vinyl.
Pretty. And it's, you open it up.
Yeah.
But, ooh, the back of the head.
Back of the head, yeah.
Inside
yeah.
the album. Yeah, very yeah. nice.
So
where's
no
the lyric sheet on those?
Yeah,
no
lyric sheet.
Sheet
on it. Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure if it did come out. I did have this. So I eventually bought the CD, but basically... the thing was like this was a CD. I would see it in the alt section at JB Hi-Fi where Joel Birch from the Amity Affliction worked.
That's
when I was 18. Yeah, that's how we became friends with Joel. And like he would always recommend us like obscure albums and stuff like that. And like yeah.
That's so fucking
this is
cool.
Brisbane lore.
Brisbane had particularly had a great hardcore scene.
Yeah, it was really, really active. Yeah. And it got splintered and very diverse the longer time went on as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, we had so Lachlan Watt from Triple.
You know Lachlan. Yeah,
yeah
he's
a Brisbane
great.
Boy. He was in a bunch of crazy bands in Brisbane and yeah, yeah, very prolific. Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Basically, I saw this. I knew this. I didn't know what it was. It was like there's this CD in JB Hi-Fi. It was like it had a cardboard slip and then the jewel case inside. It was like very seductive. Well, yeah, it's seductive, not just because it's like a lady looking seductive, but like there's something about it. It's like so foreign to me
it's
at the time.
It's haunting.
It's haunting and There's something transgressive about it. It was like, and they're on a label called Equal Vision Records. And I liked, they released Coheed and Cambria back in the day.
No idea.
No? Okay. That was the most, that's probably the most mainstream band I could have referenced from Equal Vision. But like they were a hardcore label, and then they were sort of went more and more, not really commercial rock, but they had some weird like swoopy hair bands, and they sort of went more into that
As soon as you saw that swoopy side fringe, yeah, you threw up in your mouth a little bit. You said corporate sellout.
Yeah, a little bit of that. Even though I was into that style at times. So this was another sort of, I hesitate to call it a gateway album because it was more like just cannonball into the pool.
Yeah.
Like as soon as I put this on. Because I just remember, I can't remember if I listened to it on the album or if I just listened to it isolated. The first track, Concubine, that intro.
It's a lot.
I was like, what? It's just that guitar, like that weird tapping on the guitar.
I'm going to say I don't remember it full. I listened to this album, I will let you know, in three parts.
Yeah, fair.
And this is my journey. I started it this morning when I was on my morning walk. The sun is just... this is my mistake. Because I know what this podcast is and I've done it before. And believe it or not, I've listened to hardcore music and the sun is shining. I'm walking through a beautiful park and the first track begins and I go, I've made a horrible mistake.
It is horrific. Yeah. That's what I mean. Like it was like transgressive and like I didn't know what to make of it. I didn't know if I liked it. I just knew that it was doing.
It's coming back to me now. So yes, when I first heard it, I thought to myself, I was like, well, this is going to be a bit more palatable than the last album that we listened to.
For what, like 30 seconds? Yes. When it's going dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. Yeah.
And then I was like, oh dear.
Yeah, man. I don't know. That song is like such a, it's just like, it feels like a part of my personality because like, obviously I heard that for the first time and I was like, fuck. And then I've seen them play live. Maybe six or seven times.
In Australia?
I think two or three times in Australia and then a bunch in America.
Hell yeah.
I saw them twice in one night once.
What?
Oh, no, twice in two nights. They played two shows one night after. And they played completely different sets. Because they just have such a huge back catalogue.
Are they still together?
Yeah, still together. For all intents and purposes, they're still together. They just like have like 4 or 5 years between albums these days because they're 50.
As you should.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone should do... Yeah. Albums years back to back. There shouldn't be that expectation.
But it was just like I knew what hardcore was, I knew what metal was, and then this came out and I'm like, oh no, I didn't.
Oh, so this is your first being like this is hardcore.
Yeah, this was the most extreme. Well, it was more like
this is
the
you
extreme.
Coming out of the baptism pool and seeing the very dark light.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was more like the extremity of me. It was my first engagement with extreme music, what you would call extreme music. And so from here, like nowadays, I love like black metal, I love grindcore, I love all these like extreme types of music, but this was the first instance of it. And it did pull all those influences into it. Like they are at their heart. Like, again, this is going back to like, oh, it's about the type of dudes who are in the band. So it's the spiritually.
How many dudes are there in the band?
Four.
Healthy amount.
Spiritually, they are a punk band. They're just a punk rock band.
Yes.
But they just, as individuals, they have all these different influences that they're pulling in.
Mm-hmm.
And that allowed me to get further into the subgenres or like the niche corners of metal and hardcore punk music.
What are some of their influences?
So the big one that sort of struck me was there's a band called Starkweather. I don't even know what you'd call them. But the lead singer, Jacob Bannon, lead singer of Converge, Jacob Bannon, he would always talk about Starkweather in these interviews. And they're like a metal band, but like this sort of like this weird unstructured songwriting and with this like wailing over the top. It's like very alienating. It's like it's the bleakest music I've ever heard. And I don't love it, but again, that's a band that's doing something.
Yeah.
And you can hear their influence in Converge a lot, but I think they crystallize it, the vision a bit more. It just brought punk rock and it brought metal way closer together. And like the borders between these genres seemed to matter less and less to me. And I was like, it was more about what is this band doing? Like, what is the artistic vision here? What is happening?
Yes.
And then live, it's just like a whole other thing as well. It's just so violent and...
It's really violent.
It's super violent. Oh, I remember seeing them on a DVD. I can't remember. It must have been like a Vans Warped Tour or something like that, where they're like two camera, the four of them. And like when we get bored, we just whip each other with our belts. Oh, like it was like full jackass mode. Like I was like, yeah, that's cool. That speaks to me.
Makes sense. There's pain in there somewhere. So yeah. I have a question about the album.
Ask me as many questions. Overall. I've got the story, but I want you to.
Okay. I get really into hope it. This is true. Is this album based around like a narrative concept?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yes! Yeah.
I knew it.
The lyrics are the term that keeps coming up in all the stuff I read about it is personal apocalypse.
Oh.
Which is a funny thing to say about an album that was recorded the same year.
Are you talking about my 20s?
Recorded the same year as fucking 9/11. And they're like, I went through some heartbreak.
Wait, so is it about heartbreak?
It's about I think it's like a more thematic record than just this, but it is. I think it is the result of a breakup. I would say the lyrics aren't necessarily about a specific woman and his relationship with her, but like he went through he's never talked about it in specifics, which I think is good because if you were this woman, fuck, God damn.
I'd be getting an AVO.
Yeah, exactly. absolutely. But so he hasn't like given details, obviously, about his personal life, which I think is wise because what the album does is bigger than that, I think. Like he's made art out of just like what would otherwise just be like a bad breakup.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
And I've been there. Like if someone does, like if you love someone, they don't love you or they like betray you or something. It's like, oh, I'm worthless and I want to die.
Yeah. And you get those thoughts in your head that that's you're kind of like, calm down, bro.
Yeah.
Not that bad.
but basically, like, okay. So like how this came about, they formed in 1990.
Mm.
They would have been around 15 years old.
Oh, wow.
When they formed the band. And then it was 4 years before they released any music. So around their 20s, early 20s, late teens, they released their first album. And they released 3 full-length albums and a bunch of EPs and split 7 inches and stuff between 94 and 1999.
Mm.
And they were pretty beloved in the hardcore scene.
Mm.
Like they had a following. They had fans. They were headlining tours. But they were extremely underground. And then this came out and then all the critical press started paying attention to them and they became, nowadays they are like, at least in America and Europe, one of the biggest headlining metal bands that you could probably book for like a festival or something.
That's
like that.
So great because I've never heard of them before.
Well, yeah, that gives perspective, I think, for people who are like, oh yeah, Converge are huge or Converge are sellouts, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, most people still haven't heard of this fucking... Like, most people in the world still haven't heard of this fucking band.
I think maybe if I was, like, 5 years older, I might have. But because I was 5 years old in 2001...
But so much happens in those 5 years. Like, so many other bands come... Like, you've heard of Amity Affliction.
Yes,
do you know what I mean? And they are also a huge headlining, heavy band. Like, from a very different world, at least sonically, to what these guys are doing. Mm. But
it always blows my mind that I'm like, they're Australian. I'm like, what the fuck?
It is weird. Yeah. It is weird. It's weird to think of going into JB Hi-Fi on Adelaide Street in the city and just being like, hey, Joel.
That is so fucking nuts.
Cool subies, Joel.
I think Australia does to this thing where they have, because our music scene is not as big as it should be.
Yeah.
And so often bands will find like international success before they find domestic success.
Yeah, you see that a lot. Yeah. They have to go over to record in LA and all this sort of shit.
Yeah.
Totally. So yeah, this came out and it changed the band. It changed their careers. Like it did change everything.
This is one where they can quit their jobs in the cafes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Fuck yes.
Yeah. Does that surprise you in terms of hearing it? Like how was this able to let them do music full time?
At the start of the album, if you'd said that, I would be like, okay, what the fuck? But by listening to the end of it, I was like, even though I didn't hear a single word whole time, there is a concept and there's a vibe to it there. And even just like through the emotions I felt listening to it, I was like, there's a story and there's like...
It's dark.
It's really, really dark. And also, I mean, just the art for it as well suits the music to a T.
It is wild.
It's crazy.
The vision is like, especially reading about how it came together, there didn't seem to be any sort of set manifesto, but like the way they executed this vision, it just sort of all came together that it's so, you can't really argue with it. It's just like, these are the right people to do this.
Yeah.
Because it seemed very intentional, but without being premeditated.
Yes.
Yeah. So basically what the landscape was is like metalcore was becoming like a commercially viable sort of type of music. Like
and also rap metal was big around.
Rap
that time.
Metal was big, and then like I think you had Headbangers Ball on MTV. So bands like, I mean, it doesn't really matter what the bands are called, I guess. But like bands like Hatebreed and stuff like that were bringing like that mosh metal, metalcore, festival metal stuff. Like I did an episode with Hastings about 1992, a band called Biohazard, which were like this really weird
Biohazard
in between genres. Sort of, they were able to do big festivals and stuff and like get that Juggalo ICP crowd, but also keep like this sort of street cred as well. So that was nearly 10 years before this came out. So there was a corporatization of metal music happening.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like there was a lot of before and after it came out. There's a lot of like production sheen on that type of music, and like Amity, I know Amity a more recent example, but that's a really perfect example because like the quality of production is so it's so pristine, you know. Whereas like this is like very
muddy.
Yeah, I see. That's interesting. I don't find it muddy. I can hear. But I've listened to it millions of times.
I listened to this on three separate listening devices. I started with Bluetooth headphones, and then I was like, I really cannot hear a thing they're saying. So then I graduated to wired headphones.
Yeah.
And then I could hear a little more of the vocals, but it was still reading as rah, 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 rah.
Yeah.
And then I listened in my car, which, despite being a Suzuki Alto, has a fantastic sound system. Shout out to the 21-year-olds who had $3,000 spare when they had it before me. And I could hear it like a lot clearer. And I was like, okay, this I think is where this, I'm meant to listen to this album. Yeah, I wish I started
in the
Alto.
You need a bit of separation between the EQ and stuff, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So just like a couple of quotes from, I guess, reviews or like more like retrospectives about that sort of.
So these are reviews from today?
From today. These are looking back. Ooh. Yeah, yeah. Not today, but yeah, more like I think as early as 2011 maybe or 2021, which was the 20-year anniversary. They always do these articles when it's like 10-year, 20-year, whatever.
Yeah.
So this is from an author named Stephen Hill. Just trying to give context on it is like this band was about to unleash an album that couldn't have been more complex, more raw, more challenging, and more at odds with alternative culture's dalliance with the mainstream.
Ooh,
so this is about this is about like the major labels like kind of vampirically preying on mainstream, which was the story of the 90s.
Yes.
And then I think you did have a lot of bands throughout the 90s kind of like reacting to that and trying to get more and more extreme, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, or just experimental even. It's pretty clear. This is Tom Brehan, who is he keeps coming up. He writes all the articles about these bands. He's from Stereo Gum.
Go off, Tom.
It's pretty clear that Converge weren't hung up on the differences between metal and hardcore when they made Jane Doe, and that's probably why the album has become a revered text in both of those interlocking worlds, and maybe one of the reasons that those worlds currently interlock as much as they do. It just like. Yeah, I can't. I guess I'm repeating myself at this point, but like for me, and it seems like for a lot of other people, they just sort of pushed punk and metal together in a way that hadn't been
done before.
Didn't seem like a marketing tool,
right?
You know what I mean? Because you could say Linkin Park had like punk elements to them, but it was like, no, this how do we sell Adidas track pants? So like that's but like these guys were just like. I don't know. Like this is just what we listen to.
Feels like a way artier Linkin Park. Even though like, it does feel like the Linkin Park saw this and was like, which is not the case, I know.
Yeah.
But they were like, yeah, cause something like this, but we make money from it.
Yeah, but we make money from it. Yeah. It's interesting because like Kurt Ballou, who is the guitarist.
Great name.
And main songwriter, or at least up until this point, he was the main songwriter.
Is he related to the bear from the Jungle Book?
He kind of looks like the bear from the Jungle Book.
Really?
He's a big boy. Yeah.
You gotta be a big boy with the last name.
Yeah,
Blue.
Yeah. I was just watching YouTube with him, and he's like, "Oh, my favorite band." Like people like throw all this stuff on Converge, and he's like, "That's correct." Like there's a lot of noise rock influences, like the Jesus Lizard or Helmet or Unsane. Just watching your eyes glaze over.
I was like,
but he's like, I think what I wanted to do was combine Slayer with Sonic Youth and Black Flag.
I know. Oh, no, I know two of those.
Yeah, which two?
Sonic Youth. I don't know any songs of theirs. No. I know the t-shirt that everyone wears has them on it.
Well, they were like the forerunners of... I mean, I wouldn't call Sonic... They're a rock band, but like... Mm. They had so much influence on like shoegaze style of music, indie rock style of music, blah, blah, blah. Slayer are just like the biggest death metal band to have ever existed.
Yeah. What was the other one?
Black Flag.
Henry
Rollins. Yeah. So you had the punk, you had the indie rock or the noise rock, and you had the death metal influences. And I just thought that was interesting for him to talk about, because he's just talking about a kid growing up in the 90s and what he listened to. He's like, I loved Sonic Youth.
Mm.
And then he makes this.
And you go, oh.
Really?
If I'd listened to Sonic Youth, I would understand.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, sorry.
Kind of reminds me of the t-shirt a little bit. So I did go blank for a second in the eyes, because I realized I've gotten, I know they're not hardcore at all, but a band tattoo since I was last on the podcast.
You did? No, tell us.
Yeah, I have a Primus tattoo on my inner lip. Would you like to see it? It's very faded.
Wait, have
you seen it?
I saw it on Instagram. That's it.
Oh, look at this.
Oh, it's faded so quick.
I know. Literally the day after.
Damn.
The eye was completely gone.
Yeah.
And the S is basically gone.
Hey, but you did it.
So now it says promo.
PRMU.
Yeah. And if you want context, go and watch my YouTube special. Oh, Bipolar Baby
on YouTube, everybody.
Yeah.
Is that the channel, Beck Charwood?
Yes. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Or there's short videos that explain it on my Instagram.
No, give her the ad revenue.
It's worth
please.
It, I promise.
Sorry.
Sorry.
It's a hard transition
derailed.
Back to the quotes.
But, where would Primus fit into in the hardcore?
I like to get these quotes, because it's like, I can tell you this, but I think it gives my point of view a bit more
gravitas.
Authority.
Makes
really
cool.
When it's sort of backed up. I do have gravitas, so I don't know if you know this about me. It's from a website called Everything Is Noise. It was a wild mashup of styles, which they somehow managed to pour into a cohesive vision of chaos and raw energy.
Agreed. 100%.
Cohesive? Do you reckon it was cohesive to untrained ears for this style of music? Do you reckon?
Yes. Well, I did have to check that if the song had actually changed times. Yeah. It all flowed into each other.
It does, yeah.
Very
yeah.
well.
Yeah,
to
I
the
understand.
Point where in the last track, which goes for 11 minutes.
Nearly 12 minutes, actually.
Which, yeah.
Sorry,
11 minutes
and
33
seconds. If you see them play it live,
seconds.
They can drag it out to 14. So think about that.
That's why I was late to this record, because I timed it perfectly.
Had to finish Jane Toe.
To arrive. And then I was literally sitting in my car for 3 minutes being like, the drums are still going. Okay. Are they going to do a little outro explaining this? No, just the drums just fade out.
Which is,
it's gorgeous, but I thought my Spotify was glitching. I was like, surely this is the end.
The final song is just like everything.
Yeah.
To me, that music should be.
It felt like that was the first track they wrote of the album.
Yeah, I don't know. They don't go into that. I've got some quotes from when they were making it, but they knew it was going to be the closer as soon as they wrote it. They were like, obviously, that's
it had to be.
Yeah. They call it thrilling, exhilarating, and inspiring. Which this just is speaking to my experience with the record. What I really liked was, like, I think talking about the bands that came before and after, because I sort of had to go back to get to this album. This quote really spoke to me. It showed me what you could do with that level of aggression, and that songwriting is by far the most important part of any musical act, regardless of genre.
Well, if I'd known the lyrics, I would agree with you.
Yeah.
So I just have to, you know, take your word 100%. And whoever this person is for
it. But it's also like structuring songs and like the instrumentation and everything like that. And I think... That's one thing I've always loved about Converge in terms of heavy music, is like, they write songs and that's very important to me. They don't compromise on intensity or extremism, but they still write a fucking song that has a beginning, middle, and end. It's not just like noise.
Yes. Very different from Agnostic Front, aka Boys Hate the Government.
Boys Hate the Government.
Whereas, like, because their song's like 2 minutes, so I was expecting to knock this out in like 20 minutes.
Well, the first song's 80 seconds.
Yes. But then the rest of them are like, you know, 3 to 6 minutes.
They're
full songs.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, we talked about the overproduced sound that sort of pervaded metalcore before and after. We talked about the artwork. It is one of the most iconic images in this genre.
Mm.
Like it's on shirts, it's on COVID masks, it's on water bottles, stickers. It is everywhere.
Whoa.
This became like or their unofficial logo almost.
Damn.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Do we know more about this picture?
I wasn't going to talk about it, but
I'm really curious.
So the singer Jacob Bannon, he made this. He's a visual artist, and he does.
That's so sick. I love when
it's all in-house, closed loop. Talented. So since this record, he didn't do it before this record, but since this record, he does all of the visual creative for the band.
That's right. He does I love everything. It.
Yeah, unless they have special prints or special like shirts, that they deliberately find someone else to illustrate. But yeah. So he's a mixed media artist, mixer of collage and fine art methods. Recently, like in the last year, a woman came out who was a model in, I think, the UK. And she was like, hey, do you guys remember this image? And it was like an editorial shot of her for a fashion magazine. And he was like, yeah, that's the one I used.
Whoa.
Like, no, like he did turn off comments on the post, but like he was like, yeah, I used this image.
Whoa, does it was that from mean a mag- that he owes her shmoney?
I don't know. Or? He tore it out of a magazine. I as a designer, ooh. I relate to that. It's like, yeah. It was an ad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know.
She got paid then? It's like, if you got no money
I don't know if there's
it.
Any sort of real ethical issue with it, because it's obviously so distorted and edited anyway. It's not. They're not just like stealing the photo. It's just like, here's the form. Here's the composition.
Yeah. And it also kind of implies, I mean, because the album is called Jane Doe, which is what you call like an unidentified woman.
Yeah, exactly.
Living or dead, which makes the album super spooky. And I did like that element as a true crime fan. I know what that means.
Yeah, totally.
And it kind of is like ambiguous if she is alive or dead in this picture. Because it's like, she also could be a statue as well. Yep. Like it's a very interesting image to look at.
They fucking did it.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I mean. Like someone who, for you, I imagine this is, like, relatively alien, and you can come in and say that. It's, like, it speaks to how fully realized this vision is.
Mm. Yeah, truly.
apologize to you in advance about how like, enthusiastic I was going to be.
No, don't apologize. No, I knew going into this, which is why I had to take a deep breath on many tracks and say, no, we must push through for Ryan.
We put Ariana on in between. One Converge, one Ariana.
You couldn't get further away.
I did want to listen to it before we record. I didn't have a chance.
No, you would not have enjoyed it. I think it would have actually taken away some of your sunshine. No, and you needed to be fully focused on this.
It's true. I do.
For me, it was like, I knew it was one of your favorites. And all week I've been listening to Eternal Sunshine nonstop. I loved it. But it is like the antithesis.
Yeah. Is it nice? Is it sweet?
Yes, it's really, really nice. Yeah. And it's very, I really enjoy super listenable.
I like pop music.
Yeah.
I actually got into, this is a very big tangent, but like their bass player, Nate Newton. So far we've covered three names.
Oh my God.
Jacob Bannon, the vocalist and visual artist. Kurt Ballou, the guitarist and recording engineer, who he records all of their stuff now as well. So yeah, like fully
all
closed loop. Yeah.
Goddamn.
Nate Newton is their bass player.
Sick names.
And I think it was during COVID, he did a full like best, my favorite albums. And it was like this long, long list. I'm like, cool, I'm going to listen to all of these albums. Mm-hmm. Katy Perry was in there.
Yes.
Yeah, he loves Katy Perry. The one with... it's like the blue and red cover. It must have been 20...
Teenage Dream?
No, after that. Like recent.
Oh,
like
Bon Appetit?
Might have been Bon Appetit.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know.
That one didn't resonate with me. It was interesting, but it didn't fully hit. But Ariana's new album was produced with Max Martin, so it's like, of course, it's going to be supreme pop.
He got me into Taylor Swift as well.
Yes.
Lover. I love Lover.
Oh, my God.
That's a great album.
The first track they did together is We're Never Getting Back Together.
Yeah, right.
And then he came on to 1989 and then he worked on... anyway, sorry. I that's my bag. But we're here right now on the Dead Ramones podcast.
Yes,
So we're going to continue to talk about Jane.
I think it's good to give context because like, I don't just listen to heavy music. Like, I really do
I would be worried
enjoy...
if this was 100% your intake of music.
It was for a while. I'll tell you that much. All I wanted
Bianca
to listen to
being
was Converge.
Like, girl, you okay? Squeak twice if you're scared.
Yeah, So Kurt Ballou, the guitarist, he's talking about the artwork. He's talking about Jacob Bannon and Aaron Turner, who was a record label owner and vocalist in a metal band called Isis, who they were quite close with, or became quite close with. Why can't I talk? They put the focus back on fine art into album artwork, at least in this scene. So it wasn't just, live picture of the band logo. Yeah. Like they were doing shit like this, like both of them.
Yeah. Like the ones of like, what is it? I think there's like the Beatles and the Clash, and there's another band that have an album cover that's like basically identical. It looks
exactly the same.
Yeah, because no one gave a fuck.
It's just like, we need a picture.
Whereas I'd love this. I love having visual art that goes along with another.
Yeah. AM. I'm trying to think of like, I mean, it definitely was going that way in the 90s, but it wasn't very good art. Mm. Like bands were trying to make art for their albums, but it wasn't very good.
Yes. Was this like your first album cover that you saw and were like, what the fuck?
I think it was the first one where I was like, I want to know what's going on here. I want to know what's inside of this.
Yeah.
I can't think of any others, because like, you know, Blink-182, they were just like funny, you know, Enema of the State, it's funny, whatever. It's good art, but it's just like, it's not that striking.
Yes.
That's what it says on the box. You know, really? good in that sense. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I'm trying to think. Offspring, like no, nothing really. Yeah. Nothing
Offspring
really struck
was
me.
Sick. The one was holding the bug.
Yeah, the bug. Yeah, that's yeah. Rad. But it didn't like strike me emotionally like this one did. Yeah.
Mine was Love Angel Music Baby by Gwen Stefani.
Oh yeah, that was big. Yeah, yeah.
When she really was.
She went punk.
not punk. I would say that she
stole Harajuku.
Appropriated a lot of Japanese culture in that album, but I think that's part of what made it so interesting because I don't know anything about Japanese culture, and I was like, what is this? And it was also a little bit bisexual, I will say.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
A lot of beautiful women lying across each other on a throne, and I was like, what the fuck? I want to know more about this. Don't know why.
Don't worry about it.
I just need it, Mom!
Buy it for me.
Don't ask any more questions!
So I do have a review from Pitchfork in 2002.
Oh,
so there's the actual review from it got a 7.7 in Pitchfork.
Wow,
when it came out.
Out of 5.
Yeah.
Damn.
So the reviewer was a guy named Christopher Dare. Before I go on, are you okay? Because I'm very hot, but I can persevere.
I'm all right. Yeah.
You don't want me to grab the fan?
No. Do you need a fan?
No. I'm used to it. Honestly,
I'm fine.
I'm at peace with it. So. Pitchfork, 2002, Christopher Dare. The blistering fusion unit they've evolved into has been called... Because remember, this was after 10 years of them being a band.
Yes.
That they came out with this. Has been called many things. Hardcore, metal, math metal, metalcore.
A lot of things kind of like metal.
A, always. B, B, C, closing. Converge is a smart, aggressive, brutal quintet... because I did have a fifth member at this time. And Jane Doe will kick your ass repeatedly until it leaves its long imprint on your flabby butt flesh.
Oh, my God.
2002 review.
You're still using the word flabby so
flabby
liberally.
Flabby butt flesh.
Oh, my God.
Anonymity won't curse Converge for long with an album like this so full of intelligence, skill, and intensity that it's simply masterful.
That makes sense. I did think halfway through, I was like, if they perform this live, it would be very tiring.
Yeah.
Particularly in the final track at the end, I was like, the drummer's arm's got to be falling off at
this
point.
He's an amazing drummer.
Poor Baloo.
Yeah.
You know he's jacked.
It's funny. So the drummer's name is Ben Collar.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry.
No.
Who the fuck is Baloo?
Baloo's the guitarist.
Oh my God.
No, but...
it's almost the same.
He would... I think this... I can't remember if this was from DVD or if it was just watching them warm up. He will practice with weighted gloves.
Oh my God.
So when they practice, he's wearing weighted gloves. When they play live, gloves come off.
Oh,
so it's like
literally.
You're just building. Yeah, literally. Literally.
That's
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, yeah.
How many times did he make that joke for the bands?
Yeah,
like,
I know, right?
Yeah, that's enough.
All right, Benny. Cool. But like, again, like I find these things interesting to like run by you because it's like that idea of intelligence and skill.
It does feel intelligent.
It feels elevated.
It does feel, there were several times where I was like, I mean, yeah, it would be exhausting to perform.
Because I know there's a barrier. The whole thing with this podcast is like the barrier to entry to this style of music and none so high.
You
as
really
like
just throw us over the barrier.
Kind of, yeah. I throw you into the pool without like warning you how cold it is. But like Lauren Bonner, who was on last week, we did a sort of grindcore emo violence, just to throw some genres at you, called Orchid, who were definitely like an influence or like, you know, a probably both way influence with Converge. Kurt Blue recorded Orchid's albums as well.
Such a pretty name for probably a very scary band.
But the barrier to entry probably is just getting higher and higher with these bands. Like it's hard, really. I'm sympathetic to the idea that it might be very hard to engage with it. So for you to, I guess, where am I going with this? Like I'm just asking, like, is it that hard to engage, or is it that hard? Does it feel above you, or does it just feel sort of like far from you, or like what?
Not above me. No, okay.
No. But to go back to the intelligence or the elevated nature of it, like
I think, well, because since our last episode, I got really into Trophy Eyes.
Oh yes, yeah.
So I saw them live, it was a no barrier show, and I was very proud to tell you that I was like, I was deep in the mosh.
Yeah, deep in the mosh.
Yeah, deep in the mosh was part of many of the circles that where everyone runs in and just starts like shoulder bumping each other. I was like, Ryan is going to be so impressed. And then when you asked me back on, owie. And I was like, well, I'm a little hardcore bitch now. So
this is pretty far from Trophy Eyes though, isn't
it? Yes. Yeah, and I was a little disappointed in myself that I was like, okay, I thought we were further into the pool.
No, I'm raising the bar each time. It's
fun. Yeah. But this was definitely way more listenable than Agnostic Front.
Well, I think that's more because of the recording technology.
But this one felt cohesive.
Yep.
Not just
a bunch of shit thrown at the wall. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It felt like a complete tied together body of work with a sad story behind it that I didn't know, but I definitely felt.
That's so interesting. I love it.
Speaks a lot of volumes to that. I have to agree that it is intelligent because it's like it conveyed something without words.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. People, the other half of this album, I guess, that I don't have a lot of notes on, but like it's worth bringing up. It's just
the half.
Like the other half of what I want to talk about.
Oh, sorry. I thought this was like a Renaissance part two thing where I was like,
No, sorry. There kind of is. They did a live album of where they just played this live and recorded it.
Oh, that's different to a part two.
No. Anyway, sorry.
Moving on to what you wanted to say.
Forgive me. I need to get out of the ASD. This fact. My special interests. All my interests are special.
When you're a special boy.
When you're a special boy, like me.
All your interests are special.
The technical, like the proficiency of the musicians, like the technicality of the actual songs that they're playing, like the parts that they're playing. It's like these are hard songs to learn. These are hard songs to play. Yeah.
Mm. I definitely never imagined myself and that trying to bash this one out on the guitar.
Yeah, yeah. Like regardless of like the emotional content of it or how artfully it was like executed, a lot of what, especially like musicians who are fans of it, are like they are pushing forward what we need to, how good we need to be on our instruments. Mm. We need to be better at our instrument. We need to be proper musicians.
Yeah.
To keep up with where these guys are going.
Yeah.
And that was for me as well. Like that really pushed me to become a better guitarist. And then
when we see a really good comedian and you're like, oh, I need to work on so much.
Dude. Yeah.
Every guy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Definitely. Yes.
Wow. It's almost
inspiring.
Like,
it's inspiring, but it's also very frustrating.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because then you realize where you're at and you're like, oh, I've been doing this so long.
Yeah. But I did work very hard at getting better at guitar and I did, and it was like really nice to be able to.
Can you play one of these songs on guitar?
I've never learned any of these songs. I learned one off of You Found Me, a song called Eagles Become Vultures. We play that live, but the only thing is like he keeps his tunings secret.
Ooh.
And he does use weird tunings, so you can cover a song but it'll never like sound quite right.
Oh yeah. I like that.
Yeah,
gatekeep.
He won't boss, yeah he does life. He really gatekeeps his tunings. Yeah, absolutely.
Fuck yeah.
All I know like is that
I really like how much they haven't given too much away with an album.
Yeah.
I think that
there's an element of mystique there. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And which I think
without pretension. Oh, I mean, it's a little bit pretentious. Like I think Jacob Bannon has a pretense about him, but they are still punk rock dudes. Like, they are still just bros. Like,
good. Yeah. I think that's good with an artist because I think we're getting on my little soapbox here.
Yeah.
But with the demand with celebrities and artists recently of the demand to give everyone everything of being like, put out an album or put out a special every single year. And then in between that, you've got to be creating content. You got to have a podcast.
No mystery.
Tell me what's happening with your relationship.
We hate
what's
mystery.
Going on with your mom. Like, there's a forum dedicated to what fucking is going on with your dog or whatever. Or like one time you sounded grumpy on a podcast. Are you fighting with a friend? Like it's just, and it's like this full access to everyone's
every element
lives.
Of your fucking life. Yeah.
And so you get sick of people so quickly. Yeah. And a huge part of, I think, being a successful artist is having a mistake and giving people literally 2%.
Beyonce is really good at that. Beyonce's really good at that.
She's
in terms of like thinking about like the most commercially successful person, she is still engaging with an element of mystique or mystery and stuff. Like
all the time, I'm like, she's giving us 2%. There's so many other things going on we don't know about, and she just gives us a perfect crystallized 2%.
Yeah,
and then keeps it to herself. Yeah, and I'm all about it.
It's kind of the opposite of Taylor. If you look at those two as being like the two most famous musicians in the world,
yes,
it's like kind of two sides of the coin.
Yes,
like how confessional and kind of embarrassing can you be versus how demure and I mean, I'd say Taylor's also pretentious. I don't think mystery is tantamount to pretense, but
yeah, she still has like, she's definitely now gotten a lot more control over the narrative a lot more, and she's harnessed that, and I can see her pulling back as the years go on publicly, which I was like, good.
But the whole thing with the Super Bowl was like, that was like her relationship was on display and being used to sell
tickets and
tickets,
everything.
Yeah.
Someone who doesn't have control of the narrative and is giving way too much is Ariana Grande at the moment.
Do you want to talk about Ariana Grande
instead? No, I don't.
Listen to Screen Queens, everybody.
Anyway, back to this mystery mystique.
Well, I'm sort of like into the getting into the quotes from the actual members of the band here. So Jacob Bannon, in an interview, talking about where they were at the time that this came out, he says, we never appealed to that which was going on in the metal or the hardcore world. Even then, the hardcore kids thought we were too metal. And I think the unspoken thing there is that the metal kids thought they were too hardcore, which is like a bit of a cliche for a lot of bands, but nevertheless true. I think some of our outward angst and antagonism as a band came from that attitude. We just wanted to play as hard as we could and leave as much emotion out there as we could.
Oh, rad.
Which is like I guess that's like a pretty simple manifesto. Like in the end, it's like, we just want to be intense.
Yeah. I mean, hey, is that not the mission statement for hardcore music?
And the fact that it was so successful speaks to how adept they were at communicating that, I guess, like throughout all the noise and throughout all the chaos and the incomprehensible lyrics. Talking about the lyrics, I did want to get to this because
please
it is
tell
hard.
Me any of them, because so obviously I think it is gonna enhance my experience of finally knowing what the fuck these guys are talking about.
We don't have a lyric sheet in my reissue, but I'm pretty sure there was a lyric sheet in the CD. The way he laid them out, at least for You Fail Me and No Heroes, he would lay out all the lyrics in one big sort of text block.
Oh.
Very small typeset. And so you would have to read them. But I think the just how even to a person who loves metal, like you don't understand what he's saying.
Right.
That creates more intrigue to actually sit down with the poetry,
which has worked because
and
I'm
read
chomping
the
at the
poetry.
Bit.
Yeah, well, like one of my favorite songs is there's a 1-2 punch in the middle of the album. It's Bitter and Then Some and The Broken Vow, and I do get the lyrics of those mixed up, but like those are probably my two favorite songs off this, and just like the end of either of those songs is like, I'll take my love to the grave.
Yes.
But it's like on a
weird... You did text me that.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I was waiting for it for the whole time.
You didn't get it?
And I thought I heard it in two separate songs. And I was like, I'm just going to have to come back to Ryan and check.
But it's like, and it's on a weird sort of time signature. So it kind of like starts on a different beat each time. So it's like, I'll take my love to the grave. Dun, dun, dun. I'll take... Yeah, it's just like
now
changes
I
the
know
beat.
Where it
yeah,
is
it's
the
really
album.
Good.
Yes.
It's fantastic. What are some other lyrics? I can tell you. Lost in You, like Saturday night, searching the streets with bedroom eyes, just dying to be saved. Run on, girl.
Ooh.
Run on. That's from Jane Doe. Oh, yeah. The lyrics to Phoenix in Flight. Or no, Heaven in Her Arms. Heaven in Her Arms. Oh, my God. This song, I listened to it last night. It is like, when you read the lyrics, you're like, like post Me Too. You're like, like,
oh, shit.
Well, there's a bit of revisionist history going on with this album where it's like, this is an incel album, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I don't know about, I think it was just like a moment in time. And it's like, it's about expressing emotions, I guess. I don't know. I guess people could take the wrong message from it, but.
Yeah. Before you tell me these
lyrics.
It's
fucking 20 years old.
Because I did get the impression with this album, it is about a breakup and there's definitely a lot of really dark, bad feelings towards the woman.
And himself.
Yes.
And himself.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And he was going through it too. Okay.
That's exactly what one of the reviews said. This is a guy going through it. Yeah. It's like, yeah, yeah. It's less political. I think it really does come off as less political. And that's not me being like time and place, artist and art, blah, blah, blah. I literally think that this is pure feeling and not about sociopolitics at all.
Yes,
I think
that was like, not...
He could have been a gay man and written the same record, is what I'm saying. It's not. Yes. I don't think it's necessarily gendered. It just happens to be gendered.
Yes,
I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And also,
and by virtue of that, there is definitely like things to interrogate there. There absolutely is. There absolutely is. But I think if you take it at face value as a piece of art, it's not. I don't find it particularly problematic.
No, I. Yeah. But also, when it is like. People need to remember, we didn't have self-awareness until 2013.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That's how thrift shop happened, okay?
Yeah.
Is no one was second-guessing any action and how it would come across publicly.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, of course, this stuff that now we're like, whoa, can't believe that. It's like, yeah, we weren't thinking about it.
We could do to have a little bit less self-consciousness or self-awareness.
I think that's why I feel like a lot of art is getting good again, because people are kind of getting over that hump of being
getting over themselves.
Way too, hyper self-aware. Because I think it is like kind of...
You're allowed to feel bad things. It doesn't define...
Make you a bad person.
Yeah.
Yes. So I put up a clip of me telling a story where I was clearly the villain in it, and that's what made it funny.
Yes.
In hindsight.
This is my favorite joke.
No. But that is also an example. And people commenting me like, she's a red flag. I'm like, that's what makes it funny.
It's performance also.
Is I'm saying how insane this behavior is.
Yeah,
and it's meant to be funny. It's not meant to be like, she's evil. And I
this
am.
Isn't a confessional.
But that's why I'm
we
a
all
comedian.
Are.
Come on.
So this is just three lines, but like the rest of the song, Heaven in Her Arms, really locks into this kind of vibe. Three simple words bled me dry. Three simple words bled us dry. Bled us dry. I love you.
Okay.
You asked for lyrics. Lyrically, Jane Doe is simply poetic.
I mean, yeah, I'd have to look at the whole lyric sheet.
No,
of the compared
to other metalcore bands who are like, you betrayed me, Unity. Be my friend or I kill you. Like that sort of stuff is like, this is like, it is like.
I want to listen to that album for our next episode.
Next episode will be that sort of stuff. Episode we are doing Hatebreed.
Yes.
Perseverance.
That
is it.
Wait, so with hardcore music in general, I'm guessing, and tell me if I'm incorrect, there doesn't need to be a lot of poetry in the lyrics because
you
can't hear what they're saying.
So that's another... No, I don't think there does. No. I think that's an unintended consequence of the style. But like a band like this and the emo genre that they were sort of influenced by brought that in. So like obviously a lot of bands who are actively singing, they needed to write better lyrics. But those bands also influenced bands like Converge. And so the lyrics got more poetic and got more introspective or abstract even, rather than just being like, I saw you at the mall, but you didn't say hello. I'm going to beat your face. Yeah. I don't think it's simply poetic. I think it was like a reaction to those sorts of more utilitarian lyrics. It's like, I have to sing something. I guess I'll sing about how mad I am
at
my brother or something.
Mom's
I don't know.
A bitch.
But yeah, like it is very aesthetic. So this quote says, on an aesthetic basis alone, they're gorgeous. You'd be hard pressed to hear such lyrics in a lot of hardcore before this. Yeah. It is an aesthetic choice. Like it's less about here's what happened and here's when it happened and here's what I feel about it. It's like what yeah. kind of the things that I like more abstract, more about evoking feeling rather than telling you about something that specifically happened on this date, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. Yeah. You can really get a sense of Bannon's emotional state at the time of writing this album.
Was it that very good?
And it reaches a new level of poetic lyricism that would later be emulated by many hardcore metal bands, many metalcore bands that followed. The theme of the record itself is, in a way, we talk about it. So it's about a relationship, but it's like the expulsion of past feelings and moving through turmoil. Mm. And it is about like death in a way, like mourning the loss of a future with someone, I think. Like that's something that I came to through therapy, but I think speaks to this kind of angst and anguish.
Yes.
I think. Like you are mourning a sort of death, like not just the death of a relationship, but the death of what you thought your life was going
to
be.
Yeah, it feels super hopeless wall to wall on this one.
Yeah, there is an element of light to some of the lyrics, like...
Which
like,
ones in particular?
I should have like got an example.
I know,
like,
there is a beauty. Moment in my life where I'm like, God, I wish I had the lyric sheet to the album Jane Doe by Converge.
There is a bit of beauty to the lyrics, I guess I would say, even if it's darkness and whatever. Like, you can't have darkness without a balance of hope as well. So, like... It is very, very hopeless, but that's because there is hope present.
Mm.
So you have that contrast, I think. Yeah, contrast of bleak and beautiful, wholly unexpected. This is talking about like at the time how people were reacting to it. Like that's kind of part of what makes it special because it was so, the contrast and like the dynamics of it were unexpected for this genre of music. From Jacob Bannon, I was certainly embracing the emotional chaos. I recall recording some vocals in the dark at the Fort Apache studio on the stage where they did live sessions.
That makes so much sense. This is the crazy thing about this album is, again, I didn't understand a single fucking word. But it does make sense that it was recorded in the dark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like, he talks about like, I don't know why I turned the lights off, but I did. It's like, it was an odd feeling to be in this room in the pitch black alone. It was kind of, I love how matter of fact he is. It's kind of apt for the material. It's like, yeah, I wrote this horrific personal horror story about my innermost feelings. Yeah.
Yeah, right in the dark. But again, this is this thing where you'll see artists be like, you know, I had to go to the ocean to write this.
Yeah.
And people are like, fucking wanker.
Yeah,
and
then
as an artist now, I do wanky things like that.
Yeah,
I'm like,
totally.
Fuck, they work.
Dude, recording, we went to, do you know where Yukai is in Northern New South Wales? It's near Nimbin.
Oh, got it.
We went to Yukai to record an album once. This wasn't like a heavy band. This is more like a indie post-rock type band I was in called Low Season. You can listen to it on Spotify. We went to Yukai and it was just like, you know, like... Northern Rivers, hinterland. It was very beautiful. And we had this house where the studio was in the house for this whole weekend. And it was just like so relaxing. And it made such a difference to the recording, honestly.
Yeah. When you're not having to like rush in and out like, and other life is affecting you, just to be like, we're going to create this beautiful. Yeah.
But something as simple as like turning the lights off in the live session room is like, I relate to that. I'm like, oh, I can't do this. Can we just, I don't know, just turn the lights off.
Yes.
And that creates that same sort of space for yourself, I think.
Yeah. Like, and also to be vulnerable with your thoughts. It's like, you know, when you're saying something difficult, you have to close your eyes in conversation.
Man. Yeah.
You're like, you are a problem in meetings. So glad I could say that.
But yeah, just to drive home, like this is what I was trying to get across. It's not a breakup album. Like I'll read the quote. To call it merely a breakup album misses the point because while it was specifically about a breakup, it is more generally about anger itself. Like it's an exploration of anger as a theme.
Mm.
And I think anger is also like kind of reductive. It's like angst and anguish and loss as a theme, obviously experienced through this breakup. But like, what is bigger than that? Like, these are bigger feelings than just
darker,
that.
Yeah, this is stuff way that is deeper and darker than a relationship. Ending.
Yeah. It's like, this is stuff that lives in me. I already had this in me.
Yes.
I can't blame her alone for this. She didn't put this in me. Like, this was already in me. I think that's what I get a lot of that from. like a bit of, I guess, ownership of those feelings. Like it's, yes. Which makes it very at odds with those accusations of it being an incel album. Because it's like this guy taking ownership of feelings, not saying like, you made me feel this way. It's like, yeah. I have this.
Yeah. And that's the hard You're, thing is we like, all have these awful feelings inside us. And the constant denial of like, I'm a good person. Everything about me is squeaky clean. And you push them down. It just makes it so much worse.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are a couple of like questionably named tracks to use a quote from Rachel Grace Almeida from Crack website. Questionably named tracks Concubine and Homewrecker expose the holes in the narrator's own virtues, which is fair. Like I think that was maybe an oversight on his part. But
so I hadn't heard the word concubine in so long. Yeah, yeah. For a second, I was like, "But does I that hear mean the, what
I hear the word homewrecker every day."
Yeah, God damn it.
But like she goes on to say, like the 90-second blast of bitter and then some nods to these moral failings. Like he's acknowledging his own moral failings. He's not the hero in this story. Bannon attempts to seek redemption over a thrashing squall of noise. And then the quote from him, it was a complicated and emotional time.
Oh, girl, give us nothing.
He makes depression and alienation sound immediate and physical. I think that goes back to the intrigue I was talking about. Like, he forces you to engage with the lyrics, not by listening, but by sitting down and reading them after the fact. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I've got so much to cover and we're already over an hour.
Yeah, are we already over an hour?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
How many more pages do you have of notes?
I don't want to just bore you by like reading quotes.
Holy shit, we're not even halfway through on the scroll.
We have all the episodes.
Oh, okay. Oh my God.
Don't worry. Like,
you should just write a book, babe. This is so crazy.
No, but I think right. I think we've covered it. Like I do want to talk about the actual making of the record and the guys. Yes,
I want to know more.
The guys themselves. I'm not gonna get too hung up on details, but I just sort of wanted to give you their perspective from the time of actually making
it. I'm really fascinated by this album, even though I think I will have to listen to it again to fully get it. Would you want to?
Do you feel like you want to?
I feel like I do. Yeah. And now, because I wish I hadn't listened to it this morning. Yeah. I wish I'd done it a bit earlier in the week, like an organized person.
Yeah.
Because I think on a second listen, I would have been able to absorb a lot more of it. And I'm it's evoked a lot of feelings. So I'm curious.
Well, I'll give you, because this probably isn't my favorite favorite Converge record. It is definitely the most important. It's probably the most important punk record for me.
Yeah.
But my favorite is the one that came after this, named You Fail Me. I think like in terms of the actual songs themselves, like that's got hit after hit for me.
Yeah.
So, and I did come, I sort of discovered that one first or at the same time, essentially. I had to go back in time to engage with this one. So if you're interested, I'll send you a link for that one as well.
Yeah.
It's pretty different. It's really different actually. Yeah.
Let's stay on topic, please.
Sorry, I'm so sorry.
Fucking album was made.
So we're talking about like I got this because I found it interesting the way they work together. So this is from Kurt Ballou, guitarist and recording engineer for Converge. Circa Jane Doe, and he's talking about Jacob Bannon, the vocalist. We just recorded his ideas the way he had it in his head, and that's just the way it was. There's definitely a lot of mutual trust and admiration between us as songwriters. And whenever you have too many cooks in the kitchen, it tends to dilute the food. That's how it is with a lot of modern metallic hardcore. There's just too many ingredients in the mix. You got your guy who screams, your guy who growls, then you got your dashboard confessional style vocals. I relate to what he's saying here because it's like so many of these bands will be like, oh, you've got the emo clean singer, but then you've got the tough guy main singer, blah, blah, blah. Not to throw Amity under the bus again, but like that really was like, it's not them. It's not just them. Like, they're not a scapegoat for this podcast at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like, it was a real thing, and it was like just at the time, in sort of like the early 2000s, it was like, I don't know. It was Linkin Park. You had the rapper and you had the singer. You know? Like, it's just like kind of
Link
had
the two singers too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like the idea that they just gave Jacob Bennett, this is your job. You write the lyrics and you fucking scream and you emote.
Yes. Yeah.
And we'll take care of everything else. He's like, Kurt goes on to say, I've always been opposed to that. I like to have a cohesive direction and a cohesive vision. So I don't get in Jake's way too much. And in turn, he doesn't get in our way.
Right.
What I find interesting about that is how, like, he makes it seem like totally siloed, but it just, like, I think it speaks to Jake Bannon's ears, like hearing these riffs and hearing the practice sessions and being like, I know exactly what to do for this. And he's right.
Yeah.
And he's correct. Yeah. In his,
That's so, rare as well to have like that amount of trust in a creative group.
Yeah. So basically it was like a big, there was like actual turmoil in the group. So they were a five piece. They had a second guitarist named Aaron Dalbeck. He was also
not
the guitarist.
Not a cool name. Doesn't belong. Get out of there.
He was also the guitarist and founding member of a band called Bane, another great Boston hardcore band.
Yeah.
Basically they kicked him out like the day before they were meant to go on tour for the album.
Really?
So I think a bunch of dates got delayed because of the terror attack. So in 2002, they kicked him out because they were like, you're in Bane. You can't be in both bands.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, but there's a bit of backstory to it. So this is from Jacob Bannon. We were gelling a bit more as a group without him. We were writing more together. He's talking about the four of them.
Yeah.
We were writing more together. We rehearsed more together. And when we went in to record it, it really felt more like a quartet. It weighed on us. It was a stress. There was tension there. The dynamic on one hand was great. The four of us were really evolving and growing as a unit, and we were really happy about that. But there was another thing where we were not happy that our second guitarist just wasn't present. And then having to address that and go through that brought the four of us together even more. And that was a really important part of this record.
Aww.
So it's kind of brutal where it's like us four galvanized against this one poor guy.
Yeah, there's nothing that unites us a group of people like an enemy.
It's like we took his soul and became more powerful and left him as a... No, Bane have had a crazy career. We'll do a Bane album eventually. They're amazing. But it... had to happen. There's a few other, like, there's quotes from him, from Aaron Dalbeck, about he's like so shitty about it, but it is like something that just had to happen for everyone.
And that's how great art is often made, is there's like, you can't be sometimes, you just have to be really direct with someone and honest, otherwise the art suffers.
But the other thing about that is the fact that Nate Newton, the bass player, and Ben Collar, the drummer, were new additions. So Nate had been in the band for a while. He'd recorded on one session before this, but he was writing songs on this album. And Ben Collar joined as a fill-in, but worked so well that he just stayed in the band and came in to record this. So it just was fate.
Yeah.
Felt like fate. Yeah. So Nate Newton, bass player, it's the record where we really started to change as a band. We came out of our shells and said, this is what we're capable of. And that is true. Everything before this was just sort of like, for my money, just melds into the landscape of 90s hardcore. This is Converge.
Yes.
Converge before this were just another 90s hardcore band. Yeah. They weren't Converge yet.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's always a moment for an artist where they're like, oh, this is what it is.
Yeah. And it's kind of beautiful in that way. For something so ugly, it's like, I love it. I don't know. And so talking about the process of writing and recording, Kurt Ballou says, I'd always been a control freak prior to that. In a way, it was because of who I am. But in another way, it was also because I'd had to be, because I didn't have people in the band who could contribute as well as this until this record.
Oh, wow.
So it's about that mutual trust again, about these two new guys coming in, Ben and Nate, and him being like, all right. And then Nate Newton, and this kind of echoes what I said before or confirms the way I already felt. Nate says, one of my focuses, like coming into the band, I wanted to write songs. I didn't just want a shitload of riffs piled on top of each other. I was really critical of what Kurt was writing. And ultimately, I think that was a good thing for us. It taught all of us to be more critical of ourselves. So he's saying they were butting heads a bit, but like coming out of it was a big positive, I guess.
It's almost like saying honesty.
Because these are Boston.
Being honest with people is the best policy.
But these are Boston guys. These are fellas from Boston. Yeah. So like in the recording studio, if you don't, he's like, no, that fucking sucks.
Yeah, do that up.
Hey, kid, that fucking sucks.
Yeah. You know? And saying it in a way of like, I know you're better than this.
Yeah, kind of. But then it's the same guy, Nate, also goes like, this is kind of in contrast to what he was saying. Kurt really pushed me. And I'm thankful for that because I've learned a lot from playing with Kurt. These are all quotes from a Decibel article and it's so, so long. I've kind of taken the parts relevant for this actual podcast, but it's a really great interview with these guys from Decibel magazine. So look it up online. Nate goes on to say, Kurt's a great guitarist. I'm not taking credit for anything because I'm just some douchebag who plays bass. But I will say that Kurt is so much better now than he was then.
Wow.
So for however amazing this record is, they're sort of being like, I think it just propelled them forward even more. Like they saw what they were capable of back then and they were like, well, what? Let's keep moving. Like, and they kind of pushed each other from what I can tell. And I just thought this was really sweet. I've never really said this to him and maybe it'll make it to print and he'll tear up a little bit, but I'm honored to play with him. I'm constantly blown away by the things he does, but I don't say that when we're writing songs because I got to show him who's in charge. It's just like the way they're a unit is just crazy.
They love each other.
Yeah. And okay, so I like this a lot. This was surprising to me. This is from the drummer Ben Coller, who is renowned. Like he is just such a freak on the kit. He's just so creative at all aspects. He just finds different ways to accent this. Like, he's just incredible. No one sounds like him, and therefore no one drums like him, and therefore no one sounds like Converge. Mm. The drums are such a huge part of this sound.
Yeah.
And like ongoing every single album. So, but I thought this was interesting because he's talking about just looking back on the record and what he likes about it. And he goes, the imperfections and rough edges are what gives this record so much character. A lot of my playing was really spur of the moment and improvisational.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it's crazy because it feels so calculated.
Yeah.
And what I play for those songs live is so much different than what I recorded.
Whoa.
Yeah, pretty cool. Yeah, I don't know. It's just cool.
That's
like,
so
sorry
sick.
To nerd out.
No, everything gets cooler and cooler about this album.
Yeah. Okay. So we are coming into the end of it. But like one fun little story is like when they were recording this, James Taylor was in the same studio.
What?
And he kicked them out of their studio because he paid more to get the studio that he was in, and they had to swap. Then even after he kicked them out of the main studio that he ended up using, he would keep coming across the hall to be like, can you guys shut the fuck up?
James Taylor, what the heck? What was James Taylor recording at the time?
I don't know. I didn't have time to check which album. 2001.
I would never.
They were recording Summer of 2001. So maybe James Taylor's 2001, 2002 album, depending on.
Maybe. I love that crossover shit.
It's so funny. Just to sum up, there's a few like interesting little facts to kind of bring in that I think are super significant. Because before this, Kurt Ballou was considering calling it quits entirely. They nearly broke up. Then Nate Newton and Ben Coller joined the band in 1999, which I already said. Nate Newton says, I have no doubt in my mind that we would have broken up if Ben Coller hadn't joined the band. Because Nate was already in the band and Ben came slightly later. Yeah, I already said this. His drumming is such a big part of the direction we went with this band. Mm. Because songwriting-wise, we were never able to do what we wanted to do. And then Ben was such a freak on the kits that they were. Like,
whoa, yeah, that's so rare that you hear. Technical it's like ability. The drums were actually the thing.
He saved us.
Yeah.
He rescued us. I said they were able to become full-time musicians because of the critical reception of this album. So many imitators. Like, it just has left such a mark. Like, this, I think, like, obviously Converge as a band, but I think this album specifically is still such a touchstone for the genre, and bands really want to imitate it technically or emotionally regardless. But, like, they kind of left this sound behind. Like, you go to You Fail Me and it is a completely different record. It's like moving more. And with every record, they just do something different. Like a friend of mine who I was in bands with in Brisbane, Luke Rollo, they ended up, you know, you fall off eventually. I'm not a huge fan of their most recent stuff anymore. And maybe that's my age. Maybe it's whatever it is. But Luke, my friend, got to that point kind of before me and he was like, I can't remember which album it was. It might have been All We Love, We Leave Behind, which is one of the later era records. He goes, I just didn't like it because what I always loved about Converge was how adventurous they were.
Right.
It was always exciting to put on the new album.
Yeah.
And I guess they for him anyway, they lost that edge. And he was like, oh, it just feels like more of the same now.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah, but they're bringing in so many different... Every fucking album is like prog metal, like heavy metal, like, you know, like solos and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like even softer, kind of more like doomy kind of atmospheric stuff. It's like they're always doing something different, which is... what you want from this band.
Yeah.
You'll love
this. I think what you want from an artist as well.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Absolutely. You'll like this. Converge's influence has also touched unlikely corners of modern day pop culture.
Oh my God. My favorite.
Perhaps most surprisingly, when the 1975's goading frontman, Matty Healy.
No way.
Told NME that Converge inspired the aggressive moments on their 2020 album, Notes on a Conditional Form.
No way.
And this is all. This is the last quote that I found that kind of like sums up, like maybe doesn't sum up my feelings, but rings true. And this is kind of a nice place to leave it for my side. I'll read the quote and then kind of try and explain it a bit better because it is a bit gatekeepy. A true Converge fan knows all the beats and all the unpredictable changes in timing and rhythm. The fans put effort into the performance along with the band, and it's exciting to watch and be with them every step of the way. They struggle together, and that was always the point of making and listening to music like this. The challenge elevates the significance.
You're going to have to break that down for me.
So part of it is like talking about how complex and like, you know, time signatures and how technical this is. Like you listen to it, you're a fan of it, and it just becomes like... another pop song, you know. It's just like, oh, this is a hit, this is catchy, this is blah blah blah, and then I show it to Beck Charlwood and you're like, what the fuck is this?
Yes.
But like, you know, they have their hooks in their fandom where it's like they can be as technical as like out there as they want to be, and we will still
come back
to them and like try and engage with this, whatever this noise is.
Yeah.
But then I think more generally he's saying like that it is the barrier to entry thing.
Yes.
It is so hard to get into, and that's what makes it significant.
Mm.
It is a reward to come to terms with.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can definitely see.
Once it clicks,
yes.
It's like that first time I heard Concubine, I was like, But then like you come back, because there's something, it's like chilly, you know? It's like, oh, it hurts, but I want more.
Yeah,
you know?
There is something really dark about this album that... is very similar to the fascination with true crime of you're like,
yeah.
At first you're like, oh my God, what the fuck? And then you're like, but I want to know more.
It's sick.
Yes.
It's a sickness, but it is a healthy outlet for that sickness, I think.
Which makes the title tie-in just so beautiful.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Sorry, I do feel like I spoke at you a little bit for the end there, but I did want to tell the story.
That's okay, because I love you. But also, if I truly hated the album, I would have told you to shut up at some point.
I don't need to know.
Or been like, or expressed that I don't care at all.
Yeah,
but
fair, yeah.
This album is fascinating.
And I'm glad.
It's brought me, I think the last album we did potentially pushed me a little bit further away from hardcore.
Yeah, definitely.
Whereas this one definitely pulled me in a little closer. I'm not there yet.
No. I'm not campaigning, by the way.
But I'm on my way there. You've pushed me down the hill.
But also, like, as someone who knows a lot about music culturally, it is super satisfying for me to talk to you about this. Like everyone who comes on, I really enjoy talking to. But like, your reactions are like really interesting to me because like you love pop music, and I don't ever want to specific like. Maybe with specific artists, but like generally, I don't think there's any necessary deficiencies in pop music. You know?
Yes.
Like, I don't think it's illegitimate.
Yes.
At all. And that, like, there's illegitimacy in people who are making millions of dollars. There's illegitimacy in people in the fucking underground scene right now in hardcore. So that's kind of not neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting that it got across.
Yeah, me too. I was, because when I started, I really was like, oh no, I'm going to break Ryan's fucking heart. By the end of it,
No, but you never would, because it's like, that's kind of what I want to hear. I want to hear what you fucking hated about it.
I don't know. I mean, I didn't, No, I didn't hate it at all.
But when I was like fine, when I was like early 20s, I was like, ooh, people don't get it. I get this. Everyone else hate. I got off on the fact that,
yeah,
you know, the you of whoever that was back then would hate it, and I'm like, yeah, well, you just don't get it. Like,
yes,
I definitely don't feel that way now.
We've all had that.
But
with
I hold
thing.
This so close to my heart for very different reasons than I did then.
Yes, I mean, currently how I feel about Taylor Swift, of where people, because she came to town recently, and everyone went fucking crazy.
It was Taylor Mania.
So people were issuing death threats on live radio to people who said they were fans, and. And so I got real, unfortunately, and this is not the person I ever wanted to be, of being like, you guys just don't get it. And I was like,
boys don't get it. I mean, yeah. I say that and I'm like, I quite like Taylor Swift actually.
Yeah.
Like,
she has, well, this is the thing, is when you put out 13 fucking albums, there's going to be something you like in there.
Yeah, totally.
It is a real quantity over quality sometimes with her.
Sure.
Yeah.
But that's what, that's her job is to release songs. It's not her job to make them good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not her job to make good people or change the world. It's literally just to make music. Calm down, everyone.
Do you? I have said my piece. I want to open the floor to you. If you want to wrap this up, we can. If you have anything else to say.
Oh, look, for anyone
who I've dominated this
hasn't
enough.
Heard. No, we learned a lot.
I'm glad.
We learned a lot.
I'm glad.
And I like that. And I'm going to go. And you know what I'm actually looking forward to most out of this is an X amount of years from now when I'm in a circle of absolute music wankers and someone brings up this album and I go, oh yeah, I've listened to it.
Yeah, I know that.
You know what? Yeah, I actually know a little about that Baloo fellow. So, and then I can be a bit of a wanker too. Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to.
23 years old.
23 years old.
23 years old. Can't rent. Does it feel dated?
Not really though. It is pretty hard to pick a time when it came out. I do feel like if Linkin Park feels like vanilla to you, this is definitely an album for you.
Yeah,
I would say.
Yeah, totally. Awesome. Thank you so much, Beck. That was a long one. This is our longest episode so far.
Whoa!
First repeat, longest ep. We did it.
Take that, whoever tries to beat it.
What
record can we break next?
Most
crying on an episode.
Bestest friends. go listen to Screen Queens. Subscribe to their fucking Patreon.
If you're dying to hear me talk about Ariana more, head on over.
Yeah, yeah. Get the spiritual sister to the Dead Ramones podcast.
Yes, of course.
No, because Alex J is a fucking sweetheart as well. She's so good.
She is.
Yeah.
And look, she does take the prize for bestest friends, so...
God damn it!
I'll bring her on the pod and then goal achieved.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, go listen to Screen Queens.
Bipolar Baby on YouTube.
Yes.
Go find it. Bipolar Baby.
If you type that in, it is the first thing that comes up.
Chuck, even if you don't like comedy, just put it on. Beck gets money from the ads.
No, not on the special because I used a licensed song in it.
Oh, motherfucker.
So, but you can watch the other clips.
Well, watch it and enjoy it. Watch it and enjoy it
would be the ultimate goal.
Yeah.
And you can find me at Charles Beckwood on Instagram. It's the best place to stay up to date with everything
and
I'm doing.
On our national youth broadcaster?
Oh, yeah, on Triple J sometimes. At night.
Sometimes at night. No tours or anything coming up, right? No. You're stepping aside.
No, the podcast is everything at the moment.
You're making way for a little Rai Rai.
to step up to the plate.
Do two shows at the Sydney Comedy Festival.
Yeah, plug that. You're doing Sydney Comedy Festival.
I'm doing May 8th and 10th. You've heard it before and you'll hear it many times again. May 8th and 10th, 13 jokes at the Factory Theatre. Sell out those shows and they'll give me a third one, please.
Please.
It's a very small theater. I'm in the Matchbox, which is one of my favorite rooms to do comedy in.
It's a lovely little theater.
It won't take much to sell it out, but I mean, for me, it's like it's Everest, but
yes,
realistically, I only need 80 people to get it.
You can definitely bring one friend. I know everyone listening has a friend that they're like, I'll bring this person.
Yeah.
Bring another one.
But lots of stuff about, growing up in punk rock and stuff, and then just lots of silly little jokes as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Ryan.d.sim on Instagram, dead_Ramones on Instagram. Or if you want to email me, deadramonespodcast@gmail.com.
Hey, you got the
I'm doxing myself.
Email set up.
Yeah. And the only other thing is Rat Club on Mondays. If you're in Sydney, come down to Rat Club. Rat Club Comedy on Instagram.
Fuck yeah.
I think that's... Oh, one other thing.
What?
I will put up a... Oh, it's probably already up, though, if you're listening to this. I like to do a little playlist, like retrospective playlist for each decade.
Ooh.
So I did one for the 80s. I'm currently working on one for the 90s. We're into the 2000s now, baby. But yeah, I'll just put up a Dead Ramones podcast playlist on Spotify.
Oh,
so,
fuck yeah.
Yeah, you can listen to some of the songs we talk about. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Awesome. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And thank you, Beck.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, everyone.